You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams here, like the guy said, solid conservative, just plain right. Hey folks, lots to cover down on. I mean, literally, the fact that I've got such a great audience, and I've got copper running the board, and I've got chocolate and caffeine with me right now is exactly what is getting me through this show today, because there's so much on it. But listen, I want to take the turn on the conversation about Afghanistan, and I want to run down a different track right now, because I want you guys to get a picture. You know, I texted Hamid this morning. I have to take it back. It was yesterday afternoon, and I texted him, and I said, your cousin with her small children. If you heard me in the first segment, you heard me say, I've got images of their passports of a young lady the same age as my daughter and her four young children who are trapped in Afghanistan with U.S. passports. All of the children were born here. The wife has dual citizenship. She had taken them back from their home in California to go and see family members and let the grandkids, I guess, see the grandbabies. And then got stuck when this massive capitulation of Afghanistan took place and the Biden administration pulled out suddenly and left everything in crisis. She had no idea she was going to be stuck, and now she's stuck. And she's been spending hours at the South Gate not being allowed through, despite the fact that she's got all of their blue passports in her hands. Folks, that's happening right now. And I texted Hamid, and I said, I'm concerned for what it's going to be for in that society right now with the Taliban in charge, for a young woman and no husband with her right now. And he shares that concern because he grew up in it. I've seen it firsthand. The subjugation of women in that society is like nothing you have ever seen. It is beyond the concepts of slavery that we talk about in our own history here. It is on comparison with that, I guess, but it even goes beyond it, because in some ways over there, they are literally just they are not even real people. They are not even allowed to have their faces be shown. They're not allowed to have education. They're not allowed nothing. All right. They can be beaten. Women can be beaten if the wind blows their burqa and their ankle shows, because how dare they dishonor the version of the prophet that the Taliban have decided to, be enamored of. And that's what we're looking at right now. There's one of the greatest reporters out there reporting on this kind of thing right now is Lara Logan. And if you followed any of her stuff, Lara Logan, who apparently is of South African descent, I had to track down and figure out what her accent is. She's apparently originally of South African descent, but she is one of the best. She and Jennifer Griffin are two of my favorite embedded reporters nowadays, doing the war zone reporting. They embed themselves with the people and they go places. Doesn't matter whether that place even wants a woman there or not. They go there and they do some amazing reporting. Well, Lara Logan has had a lot to say lately about the life of terror for women under the Taliban. Hey, Copper, let's go ahead and get clip six queued up. So I want to play a clip from Lara Logan in a special she did recently talking about that very thing. And one of the things that's most interesting to me about her reporting is she is not afraid to let her emotions show through. Go ahead and play clip six.
That was when I had that fleeting thought, oh yeah, this is why we're at war again. Because this is fundamental ideological difference that comes down to the guiding principles that really govern how we as civilizations choose to live. Terror is their greatest weapon. And with terror, there is no mercy. It is completely and utterly ruthless. And they will do, it is based on absolute control. And in order to maintain, not just acquire absolute control, but to maintain it, you have to sustain that heartless terror. That is what life is for women under the Taliban. It is a long, slow death.
A long, slow death for women living under the Taliban. Now, nowhere have I heard anything from the hashtag MeToo groupies. Nowhere have I heard anything from, you know, the squad, or from, you know, other champions of civil liberties in the world of women and women's disenfranchisement or women's suffrage or women's rights. Where are they right now? They're nowhere to be found. Nowhere. Because they recognize it does not fit their broader narrative, because most of them are liberal. They're not truly about women. They're for liberal policies, and they use women as their platform. What we're seeing right now is what's going to wind up being one of the greatest tragedies in this entire circumstance is literally the fact that Taliban are going to wind up putting women back 50 years in Afghanistan. Because when I was there, literally, we got there, it was fresh. Everything was still smoldering. I was there at the very beginning of the war. I know I told you many times that my service in Afghanistan came at the very beginning of the war, riding horses occasionally, growing a beard, you know, living among the Afghan people. And some of the first things that we did were try to assuage the concerns of the women of the country that this was a new day and that they were going to be allowed an opportunity. And so we did things in the midst of combat operations. We did things like we contracted for the reconstruction of girls' schools, and we contracted for the ability to create a job training center for women who had not been allowed to not only get an education, but were not even allowed to work. Can you imagine an environment where if you are a widow, you have to become a beggar because you're not allowed to work? In other words, you can't go out and work to support the family like you can in most societies. You have no choice but then to become a beggar. If there's no one there to take you in, your life is over at that point. And so all I'm saying is there is nothing out there right now. There's nothing out there right now from the liberals who have been all about championing things for women, some of which rightfully needs to get championed. But so often what we find out in the liberal side of things is women becomes their excuse to champion liberal policies. And they are nowhere to be found right now in what is about to start happening, really probably is happening already, to women who are going to be sex trafficked, women who are going to be subjugated, women who are going to be denied education, women who are going to be denied medical care, literally will be denied medical care because they cannot have a male doctor treat them. Women who will be beaten if their belt buckles are too shiny. Women who will be beaten in the city streets or beheaded if they dared to educate their child. I'm just telling you, it's happening. Young girls will be sold to the highest bidder. Young girls will be married off to old men. Education for schools that used to be for girls, those schools will become barracks for Taliban soldiers again like they were when I got there. And there's no one in the hashtag MeToo movement who is saying diddly squat about it because they know it doesn't fit their broader narrative. They need it to be a liberal policy. If it were the Trump administration, oh my God. But it's not. It's the Biden administration right now that's presiding over one of the greatest failures in foreign and military policy ever seen in the history of the United States. And it's happening on this watch. But it's going to take these private citizens and people like you in the audience right now who are going to say, you know what, no, we're not going down this road. Here's something else you might want to know, by the way. I don't know, this is going to make you mad. But here's what you might want to know. So yesterday, or this morning, I can't remember which, Hamid and I have been texting each other even as late as 11, 12 o'clock last night. And by the way, you can pray for Hamid and his family. I would appreciate that. He would appreciate that. He literally told me last night he is just so tired. He's been trying to coordinate these efforts through every ever-changing email address to send things to, ever-changing phone number, ever-changing rumor, ever-changing sense of hope, and they all keep getting nowhere. Never mind the fact that his family's been, you know, awarded P1 status for approval to be exfilled. Never mind the fact that his cousin and her children have U.S. passports. They can't get any relief to get out. And they're doing all the right things. And Hamid is just so tired, he said. And I completely understand that. His emotions are strained, you can imagine. This morning he told me the rumor on the street in Kabul is that Turkey, the country of Turkey, may consider a future request to run the Kabul airport. Can you imagine that? So the Taliban can't run it on their own because they don't have the know-how, because they're a bunch of illiterate Neanderthals. And so what they're going to do is they're going to ask Turkey, a moderate Arab nation, but one, by the way, that has a dicey relationship with the United States. Do we have Incirlik Air Force Base there? Yes, we do. Does the Erdogan administration constantly push back on us? Oh, yes, they do. Do they hate the fact that we supported the Kurds in northern Iraq? Oh, yes, they do. Did they deny us entry through their ports when the war in Iraq kicked off? Yes, they did. And do they, by the way, blame us? When the recent coup attempts happened in Turkey in the last few years, they blamed the United States for harboring who they believed were the fomenters of that coup. Well, that country, Turkey, has now been asked to come in by the Taliban and run the Kabul airport. Hamid told me, and I didn't believe it at first. I was like, okay, rumor. But all right, yeah, I hope that's not true. So Hamid tells me the rumor on the street in Kabul is that Turkey is going to come in and run the airport, and they may assist in continuing the evacuations. Well, then I check with a friend of mine who works in an official capacity in U.S. government. I said, hey, man, I just heard this rumor. And he goes, yeah, we're hearing the same thing. I said, what? And then I went and started searching online. And sure enough, I'm finding it. Here it is, Dateline Ankara. Turkey may consider operating the airport servicing Afghanistan's capital, Kabul, if the conditions are suitable, and it is requested to do so. Well, they've apparently been requested. Speaking during a visit, yada, 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 he says, quote, we have an affinity with Afghanistan that goes back in history, a historical past, and common values. We're following and evaluating developments there closely. If the situation and conditions are suitable, we're ready to evaluate such a request if it comes. And that was a few days back, and apparently it has come. You know, on the one hand, I find myself thinking, okay, I'm a little bit relieved. Maybe there's a chance the evacuations will continue. On the other hand, I'm totally embarrassed that a country with whom we have a dicey relationship, a country other than us, might be the reason why the last Americans get out of that country, out of Afghanistan. That's just not the way it's supposed to be, folks. You don't pass off your responsibility. You can delegate your authority, but you cannot delegate your responsibility. All right, we're going to go to a short break. When we come back, I'm going to wrap this section up, and we're going to start moving to other topics, things that I got to cover for you. Like, you know what? Hurricane Ida, rough, but could have gone so much worse, and there's good news out of that. Things are happening around the state of Alabama you might want to know about. Folks, lots and lots on the plate. But you know what? We got an audience full of right-sided ruffians out there, folks who care, folks who are looking around saying, you know what, not on my watch. People who are willing to take a stand, and I know it. And I think there's more of you growing by the day. The sense I have is the momentum is growing. You hang in there. Phil Williams, News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams here hosting Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Hey, folks, you hear me talking about Otter Creek Farm all the time. It's because it's so cool. I've been there so many times. I know the owners personally. Frank and Jane have owned that place for many years, and they've got an amazing oasis in the middle of North Alabama. If you're not familiar with it, Otter Creek Farm is a place where you can go and hunt pheasant and quail. They've got the birds, they've got the guns, they got the dogs, they got the guides, they got the hundreds of manicured acres, they've got the beautiful facilities too, though. You can sit by the infinity pool and sip a glass of wine and watch the sun go down. The culinary team, the chefs there can cook you an amazing meal in their beautiful facilities. You can have a wedding there right next to the lake. I mean, folks, this place is something else. You can have a corporate retreat there, you can just spend a day there. Check it out. You'll find out real quickly when you look at their website, OtterCreekFarmstead.com. You'll find out real quickly why Donald Trump Jr. chose to come stay there not long ago and why they were featured in Garden and Gun magazine. Oh, yeah, Otter Creek Farm. Check them out, OtterCreekFarmstead.com. Well, listen, I mean, there's so much happening in the world right now. I mean, I so appreciate, by the way, when things are sent in. My son just reminded me of an article that I saw early this morning. I mean, even right now, watching the world, because weakness does breed activity on the parts of our enemies, all right? Weakness breeds activity on the part of our enemies. Write that down. There's a phrase for you. I mean, that should be like number one in terms of foreign policy 101. There it is. Number one on the list, weakness breeds activity in our adversaries. And North Korea appears to have reactivated one of its nuclear-powered generators or reactors, one that is capable of producing fission material for potential nuclear weapons. So in the middle of everything else going on, the Biden administration now has seen fit to, ignore North Korea. Or maybe they just remember that under the Obama administration, they always got stuff whenever they acted badly in North Korea. Or maybe they just see that apparently we have no true leadership right now, nobody willing to take a hard stand in D.C. So heck, let's fire up that nuclear reactor right now while we can. Well, reports out, North Korea appears to have reactivated a nuclear reactor capable of producing the type of material necessary for nuclear weapons. That's not good news. All right, well, folks, we're finishing up the discussion on Afghanistan. I do see I've got a call on line two. So, Copper, I'll go ahead and take Kareem while we got a couple of minutes here left. Kareem from Huntsville. Hey, Phil Williams here. Kareem, we got a couple of minutes. What's on your mind, man?
Hey, I'm just sitting here and I'm listening to you. And I understand that, you know, it's all part of the game as far as Biden's concerned, Trump's concerned. But the thing that gets me is why you didn't have the same concern when we pull out of Syria and we left the Kurds to fend for themselves. What's going on with the women there? I mean, what exactly would you have him do different that Trump wasn't going to do if he got reelected on May 1st? Because he wanted to go ahead and pull him out during May 1st.
Well, let me jump in there, Kareem. Thing. Hey, Kareem, let me jump in. First of all, it's an assumption on your part that I am not concerned about what happens when Trump does things, because I don't think Trump should have negotiated with the Taliban. Now, you have to negotiate with who's there, but here's the other thing. Trump never intended for the Taliban to take over the country. And Trump never intended, by the way, to have... Hang on a second. Hang on, Kareem. I'm going to tell you right now. Trump never intended for this to be a plan in which the American soldiers pulled out first, left behind the Americans, and disregarded the Afghan government to the point that the Taliban were able to sweep in and take over. That was never going to be the Trump plan, ever. And so I do believe, by the way, that while I don't agree with some of the things that happened in Syria... And while I don't believe that the administrations who abandoned the Kurds in Iraq, I don't care what administration it was, shouldn't have done it. I don't agree with the fact that we left behind so many of our allies in Vietnam. But nonetheless, I'm dealing with what we have right in front of us now. And you can't tell me for a second you don't believe that Biden didn't screw this up. If you did, you're just not paying attention.
And I'm paying the utmost attention, and I'm looking at it like this. He said, okay, I'll take responsibility, but at the same time, one thing he didn't say, like as far as concerning the soldiers, he didn't say that this is what they signed up for. You see, that's what Trump said before, and I remember that. He didn't say that. Like, I have nephews that did two tours in Afghanistan. Right now, he's home, but he's also not himself. When he went there, he was a clean-cut guy. Now he's a flaming alcoholic. And that was Afghanistan. That's done him. Those are the things that our soldiers got to put up with when they come back here.
Hey, Kareem, I'm up against a hard break, brother. But listen, I'm going to tell you right now, there are ways to help your nephew, and I appreciate his service. And if he needs help, we can get him help, all right? There are Veterans Crisis Hotlines that will help him deal with his stuff. So everything else you and I just disagreed on, we can talk about another time. But with regards to your nephew, you tell him, as one vet to another, I appreciate his service, and what he did was not wasted. And if he needs help, we'll find him help. Hey, listen, folks. Kareem, thanks for the call, man. You call anytime. We'll disagree, but we'll also go through it. Folks, News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. We'll be right back after this break. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Breaking news right now. Sitting here literally during the last break. It came on TV. I'm sitting here with it on in front of me right now in the studio. Pentagon is briefing. General Kenneth McKenzie, Jr., CENTCOM commander, is briefing right now that all flights out of Afghanistan have ceased and that the last military and State Department personnel were on the last C-17, which has already exited Afghan airspace. They also did that, and General McKenzie said the State Department will update more in a few minutes, I guess. They did that knowing that there may be more who wish to get out, which just boggles my mind, to be honest with you. And as I'm working to control my emotions, I'm thinking, how do you go ahead and announce the war in Afghanistan is over, Our withdrawal is complete. When you know for a fact there's more people there that you could have gotten out, but you didn't. How do you go on the air and talk about that like it's a good thing? Well, to his credit, General McKenzie doesn't look like he's trying to take a victory lap. He's more reading prepared remarks and answering questions of the press. But the first line up on the screen was the banner that said, Pentagon officials announced the war in Afghanistan is over. And they say that knowing that they left Americans on the battlefield. That is not the way America acts. That is not the way we do things. That's the way this administration does things, but that's not the way America does things. And by God, if you people don't remember this come next election cycle, then shame on you. I'm going to tell you right now, I said it in my monologue at the beginning of this last hour. You don't have the 25th Amendment available to you right now. No one's going to go with that. No one in that cabinet is going to go ahead and suggest that they've been propping him up all this time and he's really not mentally, cognitively prepared to handle the events of the life around him right now. No one's going to do that. I'll be shocked. I would bet money they're not going to do that. So all of you out there screaming for the 25th Amendment, that's called rhetoric, and I don't believe it's going to wind up being effective. You don't really have the luxury of impeachment right now. You don't. Now, if we find a gross negligence, if we find an American who was turned away by an American because an American policy said we can't take you, that's going to be different. But right now, what they're going to do is hide behind the military operation. They're going to hide behind saying they trusted the Taliban and they didn't know, and they're going to hide everything. And you're not going to have impeachment because you have a Democrat-controlled House and Senate. Nancy Pelosi is not going to refer articles of impeachment to a Democrat-controlled Senate where the tiebreaker is indeed Vice President Kamala Harris. That's not going to happen. Where you have an opportunity right now to make a difference in this debacle we call the Biden administration is in the 2022 midterm elections. And you better be looking for strong people. You better be looking for candidates who will run, who will do something on a conservative basis, who have a knowledge of their times and of what America needs to do. I'm just going to tell you right now, I'm torn up. I'm watching this happen right in front of me on TV while I'm on the air, and I am torn up. This is just wrong. And it's an honor to have this platform and share these moments with you, but that doesn't make it any easier. I'm just going to tell you, this is wrong. This is not the way America does things. This is the way Biden administration does things. This is not the way the America I know does things. I grew up in the America that literally, as I trained to be an Army Ranger, I was required to memorize the Ranger Creed, which said, I will never leave a fallen comrade to fall into the hands of the enemy. You don't leave them behind. We are the country, by the way, that is still to this day doing everything we can to recover the bodies of our fallen from previous wars. I mean, those are the bodies of our fallen from previous wars, and we're still going and finding them and coming back and verifying their remains and giving them full military honors in burial. And they've been gone for 75, 50, 40, 20 years. We're the ones who honor the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier with a permanent guard that never leaves its post. And yet the Biden administration will tell you they did all they could. No, sir, you didn't. No, sir. No, sir, you didn't. And if we don't see some resignations, I'm just going to tell you, somebody, by God, somebody better step up and say, that didn't go the way it should, and I take responsibility, and I've tendered my resignation. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, General Milley, Antony Blinken, Secretary of State, these same people that are in charge right now are the same ones that created the massive vacuum in Iraq by doing a quick withdrawal of all troops. Obama was desperate to end that war. And next thing we know, we had ISIS consuming a third of the country and working its way into Syria in order to form what it called its caliphate. Oh, I had one liberal one time tell me, they don't want land. They just want the opportunity to have their ideology. Well, bull crap. They wanted a caliphate. Caliphate is land. That's what they were doing. They took a third of Iraq and part of Syria. And we had to go back in. I predict to you right now, we will have to go back in. I predict to you right now, we will have to go back in. Because this is not the way America does things. This is the way the Biden administration does things, though. And as a veteran, I am appalled. As an American, I am appalled. As an Alabamian, I am appalled. I got a caller on line one. Copper, I'm not sure what he's calling for, but I'll go ahead and take it. Tim from Huntsville. I see, but okay, I see that. Yeah, that's huge. Hey, Tim, this is Phil Williams from Right Side. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm good, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, I missed exactly the topic you were on every time, but I was in the O Guard for back during President Reagan's term when they brought the soldiers back from Beirut to Dover.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry about the terrible phone signal I'm driving. And I just can't believe the difference between the way President Biden is now and how President Reagan was then. It's night and day.
What was your observation of President Reagan back then?
Just how stoic and how just emotionally wrecked he was, just how much that he was totally involved in every aspect of it. We were there a good hour and a half before the families and the president arrived because he wanted to spend more time with family. And we did a joint service with, you know, all the other services on our guards and had to make two trips there. In all my time, it was the most emotional thing I'd ever had to go through. But I was just amazed. It just seemed like President Biden wasn't invested in the time or the families.
Yeah. He did meet with the families yesterday, but apparently it didn't go very well. And there were some of the family members that refused to meet with him. That's understandable, I guess. Watching the way things are right now, I'm afraid, Tim, that we're going to wind up seeing more stories like this under his administration if things don't straighten out sometime soon.
Well, I was in during a peacetime, you know, except for the Beirut embassy, and of course we had Grenada. But being in the old guard my entire time, I never really had to do any type of real infantry. It was it's almost like being in the full-time Boy Scouts, believe it or not.
No, Tim, thank you for your service. Thank you for your service, and I'll be honest with you. I've attended a ceremony at Arlington as soldiers came home from Afghanistan to be interred, and that's God's work, and someone's got to do that. It's an honor to the family, and so, you know, your service was huge, and I don't think you realize the extent of your service in terms of the consolation and the closure that you provide to people's lives when you did that. So, brother, thank you for your service, and don't ever talk it down again, man, at least not with me. But, hey, Tim from Huntsville.
I appreciate your service, and I have a little bit of laryngitis today, but I just had to call in. I hate public speaking, but I thank you for what you do.
Thank you, Tim. You have a great day, man. All right, well, listen, folks, we're going to move to a short break. I think I need a minute anyway, and we'll be right back.